Okay, give us a moment. Our flag bearer is going to get the flag so he can hold it. All right. Thank you. Okay, so our meeting will come to order, and so thank you for standing. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And we have our full quorum is here today, as usual. So we will move into then item two. And General Manager Gruber, are we having special reports today from Chief Hollingsworth or Commander Taylor?
Madam President, I don't see either one of them here, but they were an invitation was extended to both of them. So maybe they're got a conflict in their schedule or something like that.
Okay, so we'll move on, and if one of them should come in later, we'll see if we can hear from them then. Okay, we have two on item three. We have two presentations today, and so
just a moment. Reverse the order.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest, reverse the order.
Okay, all right. Vice President Thompson had a very good suggestion. And we do see a lot of wonderful blue shirts out there, CSD blue shirts, and we welcome you today. And while we know this is going to be very exciting for you and you wouldn't mind staying quite a while, I think that we'll go ahead and move on and have General Manager Gruber introduce, first of all, our presentation to you, which I certainly agree is a very good idea.
Thank you, Madam President. If you would join me, I'd appreciate it because I don't think I can hold all the plaques. Maybe Bob or somebody can help me too. But under acknowledgments and presentations, under 3B, we have Water and Wastewater Department employees to receive a certificate of recognition. I think the board and the community historically has done a really good job in recognizing the fire department, the facilities and resources department. We get recognized, the admin department, every board meeting. As Director Berenger says, sometimes we're a water and wastewater company, and I don't want that to be forgotten. Our water and wastewater departments are on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And a lot of times when we're enjoying the holidays or sleep in our beds, they're out working. And so I just wanted to publicly acknowledge them with some certificates this morning. And also just to get to, I think you know pretty much all of them, but there may be some new faces that you don't know. John Alchin is here, and then also Jason Buell is serving as our interim water supervisor, and they just do a fantastic job. And so I just want to publicly acknowledge them and say thank you. And I know the board really appreciates the work they do. When you turn your faucet on, you always get clean water. And when you flush your toilet, it always goes down, hopefully. And I think the last 5-6 years, we've continued to improve our infrastructure to the point where it's much better than it was several years ago. So with that, if you would join me at the podium, I'll go ahead and hand out the certificates to everybody and just say thank you to them. And hopefully Kathy can get a picture of everybody at the end. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, and Bob, it's your department, so do you want to hand them out? And I'll join you.
Jerry, as you're doing that, maybe you could give an overview of each's responsibilities and what they've been involved with.
Okay, these aren't necessarily in order. Can you hear me? They're not necessarily in order, but so Ben Grosskreutz, if he could come up. And Ben is in the water department. Ben's been with us for several years and does a fantastic job. He's the one that's out there repairing the leaks, running the system. And thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Yes, sir. And we got Jason Buell, who is our interim water supervisor. You know, when Justin left, he took the place of Justin Smith. Jason's been with the community for years and knows the system probably better than anybody. He has a T3 and has just been doing a fantastic job as the interim while we're seeking to fill that position. So. Larry Moore, could Larry come up? Okay, so Larry's unavailable because he's operating the sustainable water facility. And so Larry has been trained by Justin before Justin's departure. And we could give that to Jason, and Jason could go ahead and give that to Larry. So Larry's running the sustainable water facility, and he's out there right now, and he collects all the samples, and he's responsible for that. So just doing a fantastic job. So we want to thank Larry for that. John Elchin, he is our wastewater supervisor. John joined us from the county, and John is has a grade 4 in wastewater and a grade 3, a T2, and so he's dual licensed, and which has been really helpful. And he's also serving as the chief plant operator for the sustainable water facility. John has a real strong maintenance background, which has been needed for the district, and the result of that is that the wastewater treatment plant's probably been mechanically and operationally more sound than it's been in probably 20 years or so. So we're really, as a general manager, we're so thankful to have John and all these folks on board. So thank you, John. DeLon Blackburn, I'm sure most of you folks know DeLon. Come up here, DeLon. He's been with the district for quite a few years. Ten years. And DeLon has a grade 2 in wastewater, and he also brings a lot of historical knowledge to the organization. So he's been really helpful in helping John in transition into his new position. And DeLon and I have a unique appreciation for each other, and he's just been here for 10 years, and he's the guy that's the middle of the night, weekends, holidays, it doesn't matter. So this is the bread and butter of the district right here. So
thank you, sir. Great place to work.
Jay Block. Jay's been with us for about, I guess, the district altogether, about 4 years or so, almost five. Jay started at Facilities and Resources with Carlos, if you remember Jay. And Jay is now at the wastewater treatment plant as an operator and trainee. And again, a strong mechanical background, specifically an electrical aspect of things. So he's been a real a blessing down at the wastewater treatment plant too. So we're, you know, that diversified background we have strong operations, and we have strong historical knowledge and maintenance and now electrical. So Jay, just really appreciate you. Next is Travis Holt. Travis is relatively new to the district. And has a very strong background. One of the things that we're noticing when the new candidates or new people that are coming to the district is that they have an extensive background in water and wastewater. And so Travis is an individual that brought a lot to the organization and has helped a lot out in the field. So thank you very, very much. And then Tim Omar. Where's Tim? So Tim, we got to give him a big. He just passed his grade 2 wastewater treatment plant license. And Tim is licensed now. He was an OIT and got his license. But Tim has a strong collections background, and that's what he did when he previously came here, which has been an area that the district has needed some help in. So Tim brings that background. So what I'm hopefully trying to convey and explain to everybody is that we got a really good mix of folks here. We've had folks that have been here for a while that know the system. We have folks that have come in from other systems, other cities, districts, and things like that, that bring a fresh perspective, but also bring experience in other areas, and that's what we need. So, and we have we just have a really good team here, and they all work together. Even though they're water and wastewater, they're all unified down at the wastewater treatment plant. And if something big goes down, they're there to help each other. There is no line drawn in the sand. I'm water. I'm wastewater. So. I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you to you guys. And I don't know if President Robinette wants to say anything, but.
I have to say a couple of words. Certainly, it'd be absolutely a privilege to have a moment with you. And I do know some of you. I've known some of you quite a while and some of you just recently. And I can tell you right now that our community is very fortunate to have such a great team. You keep everything moving, you keep things working, you communicate well with us, you work obviously well with our community, and so I think it is with great comfort that we every day enjoy this community because you're here. Thank you very much.
Well, I'll be brief. I just want to thank you all, too. I think the community is truly blessed to have you working for them, and I know how hard you work behind the scenes. You don't always get recognized, so I really appreciate the fact that Jerry and everyone has recognized you here today. So again, I really owe you a debt of gratitude and greatly appreciate all your hard work, so thank you.
So, Jerry? Jerry? Before they all disperse, which of these gentlemen was responsible for fixing the leak the Saturday before last at the Pine Dorado grounds? Thank you. You saved the Viva event for Rotary, so really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, very nice. Director Rice?
I just wanted to say, I find it amazing that these gentlemen that were up here, they take care of making sure we have water and that our sewer plant runs. That's not very many people, considering the thousands of visitors we have every year and about 6,000 people that live here. So they work really hard. It's a very small team, but I'm really glad that they're... Thank you for recognizing.
Okay, and another just suggestion I want to ask you, General Manager Gruber, as we're going through the agenda today, is a question, in fact. Where's the gentleman, Bill Worrell? I want to ask, since we're going to have this on the agenda, too, for discussion, my only question is, would it flow better and make better sense if your presentation proceeds when we have that item on 9, under item 9? What do you think?
Yes, ma'am. Madam President, I think that would be a good idea. We apologize for staff not catching that, but I think it would be a little disjointed if we did it in two separate ones. So the suggestion, what I'm hearing is that when we have this under regular agenda, he could go ahead and give his PowerPoint presentation at that time. And
yes, I think that would be, it'd be really a smoother kind of thing. Okay. And it shows you that we do read our agenda and study before we get here, too.
And we have two other representatives. I was sent an email this morning. We have the ops manager, Rico Diaz, and the controller, also Matt Myers, are here. So in addition to Bill, we have two other people that could answer any questions regarding this agenda item. So I appreciate them sending their staff up here to be able to help the board in the deliberation of this matter. So,
okay, excellent. Yes, I think that'll make for a really comprehensive discussion, too, and to have all of you here. We appreciate that, too. Okay, so then we will move into agenda review. And do we have any items to be pulled, consent items? No one?
None.
Okay, so then we can go ahead and move into public comment before we get into the agenda on anything else that's jurisdictional to what we do. And first of all, we have then Richard, and we've had Richard here before. Where are you, Richard? Okay, another blue shirt. There are a lot of blue shirts. Okay, so first on the public comment, Richard Margetson. He is president of People Helping People. So welcome here again today. It's good
to
see you.
This is the 11th year that I've been here about the largest fundraiser in the county for the homeless, needs and wishes. December 10th at the South Bay Community Center in Los Osos, on Los Osos Valley Road, right behind the skateboard park. You've heard the spiel before. What I really came today to talk about was a couple things. Your high school students, through the Interact Club, have been collecting coins and folding money, as Merle used to say, for 6 years. They will be at farmers markets starting the 25th for the 3 weekends leading up to our event. Please be generous. They're out there. They make the effort. When they get everything collected, they come to Los Osos the day of the event. We have them on stage with their containers, with their total. The community looks forward to them coming. So it's a wonderful event. It's an event that has no overhead, so every penny that's raised that day goes to the three charities. And the three charities this year are Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, which next year will be 40 Prado. Because one thing that's been accomplished in the last 11 years is groundbreaking for a new shelter in San Luis. Long overdue, we finally got there. The board for the new center was established last night at a meeting I was at. I will actually be a member of that board going forward. Long overdue, but still in major need of ongoing funds. Everything in the room at that event, and Amanda's been there numerous times, Merle used to come, is donated. We have usually 300 to 400 silent auction items, 400 toys in the toy store, baked goods, everything in the room that you can buy, bid on, put a raffle ticket in for, or purchase and just walk out with, was donated by somebody. The community, the entire community of this county comes together for this event. And it's got a great atmosphere. If you need to get in the spirit for the holidays, this is the event to do it. So be generous with the kids at Farmers Market. They do a wonderful job. The last thing I wanted to talk about, we have some changes in the entertainment this year that I want to highlight. We have the usual choirs. We have the Los Osos Middle School Choir, the Morro Bay High School Choir, Colleen Wall was the choir director for those two choirs for years. The entire time Needs and Wishes has been around. She retired last year, and she started what's called Community Choir in Los Osos, which is supposedly the premier voices in the area. She started out with 5 members in July. She now has 55 members. And from what I've heard, the couple times I've been at the community center when they're practicing, they're unbelievable. The other thing we have this year that's a little different is, and I brought the card because I'm sure I'm going to screw up how I say this, but Ishimi Daiko, Japanese taiko drumming. If you haven't seen them, they performed at the 30th anniversary party for the community center in Los Osos this summer. They were unbelievable. The room came to an absolute standstill while they performed. Somebody could have walked away with all the donation jugs behind us and nobody would have known. They're performing at 3:00. So if you haven't seen them and you want to see them, 3:00 at the community center. The choirs start earlier in the day. We also have a magician this year, a local magician that just got back from a 3-day stint at the Luxor in Las Vegas. Very good. He'll be performing at 4:00 right after the taiko drummers. But it's a wonderful event. You know the other things I've mentioned in the past. Please come. Pass the flyer around. I left flyers on the front table. And anybody have any questions other than that?
Just a quick comment. Just to remind myself, I think I heard it, that these jugs are going to be at the farmer's market.
Farmer's market.
Is that the only place that it'll be?
They put them throughout the schools, too, but the only place that they have them where they'll be in the public will be at farmer's market.
Okay.
One year they put them in a couple of the groceries, or in the grocery store, and I don't know how that worked, but I don't think they have plans for any of the stores.
Thank you.
December 10th, 10 to 6, Los Osos Community Center. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and it's good to see you each year like this. You do some great work. We appreciate it. Okay, next on public comment, we have Christina Tobin. And Mr. Carmel, are you getting the clock?
Hello, I'm coming up to speak about specifically the CCSD holding evening meetings in the future. I've never really had a chance to describe the details of the efforts of trying to go about getting evening meetings consistently, not just a few times. Earlier this year, I attended board meetings for a couple months in a row and felt that the board in good faith wanted to have evening meetings. We had a special meeting, and at that special meeting, the board was kind enough to have a meeting in the evening at 6 p.m., which I very much appreciated, with the exchange of understanding that on the agenda, we would discuss future evenings being in the, you know, future meetings happening. Many people, Cambria may recall, at least 30 or more attended at least the first half of the meeting, because another issue was the meetings are too long. Whether we start at 12:30 or 6 p.m., people just trickle off halfway through. And that Monday before, there was a deadline to where Ms. Gail Robinette could put on the agenda to, as promised at that special meeting, to discuss future meetings in the evening. Everybody, a lot of people came to that meeting. There are still people who want to have evening meetings. I am grateful that Amanda Rice went out of her way to ask Gail to fix that error. Gail did not. None of the other boards stood up, no other board members stood up for it. Months and months go by. I served on my end, doing the best to fill the room. The people of the community have spoken. A majority of the board, with all due respect, I know Barrington's been supportive of them, and in that instance, you did not do anything, but I know you've been, you didn't do anything. Amanda did. Months and months went by. It just felt like the board was turning a deaf ear on evening meetings. And when you have a board that doesn't, in my opinion, support evening meetings, then this is a board that it's hard for me as a citizen or a Cambrian, that is, to work with, because we have to engage public participation. So when that happened, the trust was lost. With all due respect, Amanda did set herself apart from the other four. So for me, the trust was lost, you know, with four out of five board members, more so three to the left here. So I just wanted to comment and take a little time on that to let the people of Cambria know I will not give up on evening meetings. It was okay, great that the board had a few meeting evenings before the election, one or two or three, but that's a political move, waiting the entire year. And now, are we having any evening meetings? I hope that the board can consider, Amanda and maybe Jim, you can come back and resolve, fix. I think that I feel that with
and
you.
I thank you. I thank you.
Is my
for
time
your,
up?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
unfortunately,
Madam,
our buzzer is
not working.
Okay.
Is not working.
I didn't. I know would have. Okay. So thank
right.
you for your time.
Thank
I
you.
Now know the light was off. I'm used to the buzz. So okay.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. Now, Chief Hollingsworth is here.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment.
Yes.
Just a comment about evening meetings. It was suggested that I did not support them. I do support some evening meetings. However, I'm sure, as you have seen in Facebook, and I know Kathy commented on it, she's seen it, there are people that will not come to night meetings. So it depends on who you want to disenfranchise. So I think what we try to do best is to have a little bit of both. So I will never vote for all evening meetings, period.
Thank you. Okay, we have no other requests for public comment under item 5. We did move forward with our first presentation and no special reports, but Chief Hollingsworth is here. And did you everything you have to say is special, of course. But did you have something for a special report? I think so. Welcome.
Good morning. Sorry for a little bit of a delay. We were dealing with another incident earlier that drug out a little bit longer than I expected. This agenda didn't specifically have reports from either fire or law enforcement listed as it does in sometimes, at least on the one I had, but that may have been a draft. So that if that's the case, it's entirely my fault. But I did want to have the stuff ready for you just in case you wanted it. You have the stats for you in front of you. We had 78 responses this last month. As fairly typical in regards to numbers, 45 of them were EMS related, and all of those are being delivered in an advanced life support level continuously now, secondary to you supporting the grant that we had applied for a few years ago. Some of the things of particular interest is, and I think I mentioned it last month, but we've actually completed a week-long committed ocean rescue swimming and boat operator course, put seven of our local personnel through that. And part of the focus of that is because of the decline in volunteerism, we're trying to make sure that everybody that's actually on staff is available and eligible to run water rescue calls, because I have an issue with responding to an incident and standing there and not being able to actually effect rescue. And everybody that tends to be in this line of service feels the same way. So our major part of our funding for our training is focused on that this year. We've held one class. We're looking at holding another one at the beginning of the year. Those are open statewide. We had other participants from other agencies around the state that were involved. And luckily, one of our retired captains is an instructor to do that. And Ryan Maloney, actually also one of our engineers, is getting certified to do so as well. So it's able to offset a little bit of the cost for us to host those classes by having people eligible to teach. So we're able to bring those here, and hopefully by roughly February, weather permitting, we'll be able to get almost everybody in the department up to that technician level of rescue. We did complete an engineer hire this last month. Starting December 1st, we're going to be able to finally fill the two existing vacancies, one paramedic engineer position and one EMT engineer position. We hired Mike Berkey and Mike Castellanos out of our Reserve Corps after a very, what they would define as grueling test. And so we hope to be able to bring those before you next month to have them officially sworn in. But we are able to develop them and promote them through that testing process through our Reserve Corps, which continues that succession planning, which is a great opportunity for us. And I think one of the things we also I want to end with is we always try to give examples of how we can give back and help people in the fire community that are affiliated through unfortunate events like the burn camp, the Leisha Ann Burn Foundation. And this last month we were able to participate with that, and between our Cambria organization, the county fire chiefs, and other organizations within the community, we paid for a number of different full tuitions for children that are burn victim survivors, and they were able to go to the camp for the entire week. And so I'm real proud to be able to say that we had a very active part in that. It's something that received very well in the community. We do it every year, and we plan on continuing that as long as we can. So I'm happy to say we did that. We were able to conclude that entire run all the way up at our local school. The news was involved. KSBY was there, and you probably saw some of that stuff on the news. But real happy to be involved with that. So over to you for any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, comments today? Okay, well, thank you for everything, the update. Okay, then moving on from public comment, we have then the general manager's report. So we are ready for that.
Thank you, Madam President. And if it's okay with the board, when I'm done with mine, my general manager's report, I'll do my PowerPoint first and I'll go over their manager's report. Patrick wants to share just a few things with the board and the community. There were some questions asked that we need to clarify on the CCSD cash flow projections for November 1st of 2016 through June 30th of 2017. And then also, per the Conservation Committee's request from the last board meeting, specifically Director Rice, we wanted to briefly talk about the CCSD water sales. So if we could do that. And I'm going to go over my slides really quick, and then I'm just going to go over my report really quick, and then we could go over to go into Patrick. So next slide, please. Who's going to click me? This was a water leak that a couple board members called me on, and we had several citizens on social media that were concerned about this, and rightfully so. It was at a 2-inch abandoned pipe on Pine Ridge, and Jason and Ben repaired the leak on November 2nd, 2016. When they repaired it, it was determined that farther down the line there was some additional leakage occurring, so we did repair that. I want to thank the folks in the community, a couple of my board members who had called me and inquired about this. Again, if anybody in the community sees a leak, if it's during business hours, call the office. If it's after business hours, please call the answering service, and which is our main number at the office, and that will automatically be forwarded to the answering service. And then we always have somebody on standby. The incident, the leak that Director Sanders was referring to here at the rodeo grounds, he called me, and then I called Jason, and Jason called the standby person, which is Ben, who lives in town, and they responded to that leak in a relatively short period of time. And but that's what we're here for. Management's on call 24 hours a day. The water department and wastewater departments are on call 24 hours a day. So just really appreciate the citizens of the community if they see a leak. Sometimes it springs after after the rains, especially up in Park Hill. You can be walking and you'll just see it's a trail of water coming down the street, and a lot of times folks think it's leaks, and it may not be, but still give us a call and we'll go check it out. So that was repaired, and just want to compliment the water department for doing that, and thank you again for the community calling in and letting us know. Next slide, please. This is out at our sustainable water facility. You can see the area behind the fence is cleared away. There was a large tree during a windstorm that had fallen down and crushed the fence, and so we replaced that. There was a call from a concerned resident made to Regional Water Quality Control Board regarding a deer getting into to the facility. So that was one of the areas that we believe they were getting access into, so we repaired it. The picture you don't see is farther down the road going on San Simeon Creek Road down towards Highway 1. There's still a lot of vegetation there along the finish line that we're going to clean up and get it looking nice like that all the way down. I think that's important. So, again, the fence factory did this repair and did a really good job for us. Next slide. This is the wastewater treatment plant. So it just looks like two people sitting in front of a bunch of screens, but these are our programmers and working on our SCADA system. And, again, I encourage, I know Kathy's going to get together with John and have a tour of the facility. So this is kind of the hub of the wastewater treatment plant. Those two large screens on the right are constant feeds from the SCADA system at the wastewater treatment plant. When I was there the other day, I get out in the field once a week. When I was there, the screen on the right showed real-time information regarding the influent flow coming into the plant. And so, again, it not only provides us information on an instantaneous basis, but it's constant information that can be downloaded into report forms and things like that. So, we're continuing to build the backbone of the SCADA system for the wastewater treatment plant. That's the desk where all the operators sit. Upstairs is the location where the water operations center is. And what we'll be doing is putting the same kind of desk that we have, more kind of like a command center type thing. Those desks we'll be getting rid of and getting another desk to replace those. So again, just continued improvements on the backbone of the SCADA system for the facility. We had very few alarms in the last couple of weeks, so we're still troubleshooting some of the old components of the wastewater plant. But again, we're real close to finishing the backbone of the SCADA system for the wastewater treatment plant now too. And these are all budgeted items. These aren't things that we're spending money on that don't fall within the existing fiscal year budget. Next slide. So we've talked about handrails, and if you remember, in this budget, we allocated quite a bit of money for handrail replacements on the digesters. And what John has done is, that's our workshop on the left. We have a really nice welding facility in there, and it's a really, really nice workshop. So they fabricated their own, this is done by staff, they fabricated their own handrails. That's the handrail on the left is the one that you see in place up on the tank. And so I think we originally budgeted about $70,000. Bob, correct me if I'm wrong on this, something about that. But we're doing it incrementally as opposed to having somebody come in and replace them all. And we're doing it at a significant savings. I think with parts and material and everything and the mounting of that one piece, it was only a couple thousand dollars. And then we'll go back and paint them and eventually have all the digester handrails done as time allows by staff as opposed to just hiring somebody and bringing them in. Next picture. So these are clarifiers. We have two clarifiers. We have a primary treatment facility, so these are primary clarifiers. That's a drive motor right there, and it's the original drive motor. You can see something on sitting on top of it, but we budgeted for a new drive motor for that particular clarifier. It's $25,000 to replace the entire drive motor, and then once it gets replaced, we'll do the upkeep and the maintenance on it. So if that goes, that's kind of the backbone of the treatment plant. If your clarifier goes down, if one of them goes down, you have one, but if they both go down, you're in trouble. So I didn't get a picture of the WAS pump failed and will be replaced in November. We picked it up the other day. That stands for waste activated sludge. So what you do is you waste a percentage of your solids under aeration into the digester. Well, you can't do that without a waste pump. We have two waste pumps. They were both 20 years old plus. One of them went down and we pulled it out and sent it off and they said it's not even worth repairing. So the gearbox on the left-hand side is $25,000 we put in the budget, and then the waste pump is $10,000 and we have a brand new one on the left side, and then we're going to replace the other one on the right side. So as you can see, we're slowly but steadily, I think that's the important part of all this, steadily making the repairs at the plant that need to be done, and not just you know, putting it off for another day. Next slide. So these are the digesters, and I want to thank Kathy for the article she put in the newspaper. So they're empty. They're all cleaned out, and that liquid goes through our belt, our press, our it creates sludge, and we stockpiled it. Yeah, on our belt press, we stockpiled it on the ground, and we're almost to the point, and might be today, of getting it all out of there. Since John came on board in April, and he was quoted in the newspaper, his highest priority has been these digesters. So you take solids out of your plant. A wastewater plant is just like a human body. It needs three things. It needs air, it needs food, and it needs to waste. So you have to take waste out of your plant, and you have to put them in these digesters. Well, the problem for many years, the digesters weren't operated properly. The only way to operate them properly is to empty them and get them cleaned out and get the maintenance done on them. So we've done all that. The byproduct of that is it's generated a lot of smell and odor, and we apologize for that. But that won't happen again now that we have all the biosolids taken out of the system and removed from that was stockpiled on the ground. So I'm hoping it's getting better. I went out there the other day, and it was about 80% of the piles gone, and it's smelling a lot better. But Kathy was... Kathy brought the concern to me, and I went out and talked, and we worked it out. So it's getting better. But in the long term, the digesters are functioning the way they're supposed to function. When they get full, you're supposed to process them. What was happening in years past is they were just trying to recirculate it back to the plant, and it caused all kinds of operational problems. So next slide. I just threw this in there. This is a result of three public records requests. In all fairness, one was a subpoena for a lawsuit relating to asbestos. Is that true? Four. Okay. So, but this is we have to get the documents from DocuTeam. Even if it's, in many instances, if it's just a public records request, we're working long term on a records retention and records management and records destruction program. And when I say destruction, it means that you would get rid of records that just no longer are needed from many, many years ago. Some of these boxes go back to 1976. We store our documents at DocuTeam. We eventually like to get everything scanned in, and we have over 500 boxes in DocuTeam. So a lot of Haley's time lately has been spent on public records requests. Next. I was going to have a little face stick above there, but I decided not to. So can we just come back to the live feed now on this, to me, and so we'll... Okay, so my general manager's report covers the public records request, and I'll just go over the sustainable water facility continues to operate. Last week we had John Rocky come out and inspect the facility, and from what John told me, he was pleased with everything he saw. We're still working on the gopher issue out there. We need to resolve that long term. Bob's working with the contractor. We've got the fence repaired. If you remember, we got an NOV, a notice of violation. It was for the fence, and we got the fence repaired, and the other one was for gophers. And so we're working with a pest control company to eradicate that, but making sure that whatever methodology we use to eradicate the little varmints is that it's environmentally friendly and we don't have any residue left or anything like that. The tracer study is still underway. Just as a point of clarification, the rain that we got, rain that we received, did not have any impact on the tracer study. It wasn't significant enough. So we started the tracer study September 30th, and we anticipate that it will be completed by December 7th. Final stages of the Fiscalini tank are in place. We're getting ready to fill that and then pressure test it for leaks. We're continuing to work on the urban water management plan. Bob is pretty darn close to getting that done. We're working on our website. I know I've been saying that for a while, but we're really close to launching a completely new website that'll have a lot of the information that people can just go to and get information from there. As you know, we received over 200 letters of comment letters. We're working with the EIR ad hoc committee comprised of President Robinette and Director Sanders, and we're working with Michael Baker International, Bob, and myself on responding to those letters from the regulatory agencies and from private citizens. We continue to make infrastructure repairs. The bid docs for the East Ranch Phase 1 park are out. They've been distributed. We're gonna distribute those for a 30-day period of time. We have what they call a pre-bid meeting. I think it's tomorrow. And that will be at Civil Design Studios with Carlos, our consultants, and our district council. And the purpose and intent of that meeting is, if anybody has any questions about the bid docs that were circulated, it can be asked at that time. I recommended to Carlos that they bring the contractors out to the site so they can see it. The kickoff meeting for the local hazard mitigation plan was November 14th. It was very well attended. We had all the department managers there, and I extended an invitation to the school district and to San Simeon. San Simeon couldn't make it, but I'll be working with Charlie Grace from Grace Environmental and providing him any documents so they can be a part of that process. But it was a good turnout. It really was. Category 5 is the consultants that got that bid for that. So just one thing that I want to comment on, and there's been a lot of concerns about the homelessness in the community. And, you know, it's a problem. I had made a comment yesterday that I want to redact or kind of, I said, you know, that it's not necessarily government's role to resolve this. But I think the CCSD does play a role in that for a lot of different reasons. And what I envision with the board's guidance and approval is just, you know, I think we need to have a community meeting. I think we need to have a meeting of a lot of different stakeholders, a lot of different folks that bring different perspectives and could bring different ideas to the problem and solutions. I know that there's a group in San Luis that specifically deals with homeless, and we would need their expertise and things like that. But I think it's time that we need to do that. And I think I don't mind taking the lead on that and facilitating that. We could have it here as a community meeting, but I think somebody has to take the lead, and it should be the, you know, CCFD at this point. It doesn't necessarily mean we can solve all the problems, but I think us facilitating the problems and concerns that are being addressed by numerous people in the community, and rightfully so. I don't have all the answers. I don't know if we're going to have all the answers, but I think that maybe after the holidays, I know it's something Michael wanted to do a while ago, Director Thompson. So I would like to move forward with that, with your blessing, unofficial blessing, and you know, get the nonprofits and get the folks that really know how to deal with this kind of stuff together. Cambria does some incredible things at all levels, and I think that the homeless issue is something that we need to collectively address and resolve. And so I want to publicly apologize for, I care about it a great deal. I just didn't necessarily know that we were the entity that would try to resolve it all, but I think we play an important role in it. So with that, I'd like to have Patrick, and you can ask me any questions after Patrick's done, but on my report, but Patrick just give a brief PowerPoint presentation on some of his financial concerns, not concerns, but presentations that he has.
Right. Madam President, members of the board, and members of the public. I want to talk briefly about two things. The first is cash flow, and the second is water sales through October. He's trying to load my thing. There we go. I haven't been real clear about where our cash flow is coming from and going to, and so some people have expressed concerns that we're spending more money than we're going to take in over the next 8 months, and that's correct, but does this thing work? If you look up here, if we break it out into two categories, we already have $1.6 million on hand for this sustainable water facility. And the cash flow, the total over here, includes $1.2 million in expenditures on the surface, a sustainable water facility with no additional income. Even with no additional income, we'll end up with $411,000 at the end of the fiscal year. And what that means in all other categories, water, wastewater, and the general fund, we're starting with $2 million. We're going to actually receive about $300,000 more than we spend in those areas over the next 8 months, so that we're projected we're going to end up with $2.3 million at the end of the fiscal year. So this negative $900,000 is really the result of the money we're spending on the sustainable water facility. It's not the regular operations of the district. I have a chart that I've generated to replace the one that's in the finance manager's report. I put copies outside, but it basically shows the same thing that I just talked to you about. It shows that although we're going to spend $900,000 more than we're going to take in over the next 8 months, that's coming out of a pot that we already have available for the sustainable water facility. Are there any questions about that? Does that make sense? Okay. The second thing I'd like to talk about is water. When I generated the report for the finance manager's report for November, I didn't have water sales records yet. We got those in, and we had sales. Too far. Too many buttons. We had sales of 31,242 acre-feet, which is consistent at 61% of 2013. It's exactly the same percent as last month, and it almost appears that that's kind of where we're leveling off at. I can't say that for sure, but we're not seeing the growth that we had anticipated. When we did the budget, when we did the rate study, we had estimated sales would go back up to 70% of 2013 levels. We haven't seen that. On the good side, our revenues are still about what we projected in the budget. They're actually a little above that. So the reduced water sales, because a whole lot of our sales are base charges, especially on wastewater, a large percent of revenue in the wastewater fund come from fixed charges. It's not dependent on water sales, so we're really not realizing too big an impact from the reduced water sales from a revenue perspective. And I put charts out on the table if anybody wants to look at them. They're updated through October. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. O'Reilly. Do we have any comments, questions? Okay, General Manager Gruber? Quick on the button.
I just have a couple of questions. It looks like our rent went up. Do we have to sign a new lease at the office?
That's a good question. According to our current lease contract, there is a escalation clause in there of 5% annually. We have been without a lease for a while. We went ahead and paid that increase, but we do not have a ironclad agreement with them. We're still working on resolving some of the infrastructure issues related to the building, and we brought out Benjamin Franklin Plumbing last week, and the other day, and they found some work that needed to be done, and so. To answer your question, yes, it did go up, but we don't have a signed contract with them because we're trying to get them to resolve some of the work that needs to be done in the building.
Okay. I'd like to make sure that we're protected from just out-of-control increases every year, especially since there's plenty of empty space in that complex. And then it looks like the cell phone, we've expanded the cell phone reimbursements. Maybe that's just my imagination, maybe because of the changeover with Justin or something. And I didn't see a policy about that, so I'm just curious. Could you expand, please?
We did expand it to John Alchin, who is the water supervisor, and to Jason Buell, I believe, right, Monique? Yes, and as far as the policy goes to that, was it? Correct, and also for Chief Hollingsworth.
Okay, and the last question is, somebody brought up to me, and I went down and checked it out, that the laundromat, the machines at the laundromat, are, there's a couple of them that are completely broken down and that they're not working very well, and we had bought those machines, right? And
yes, we did.
And do they have to maintain them, or do we have to maintain them? Do they belong to the laundromat? Can you? I'm prepared to answer this because it was brought to my attention
also, and there was concerns that the majority of the machines that we had purchased were following in disrepair. So I went down to the laundromat, and at the time that I went in, there was only one washing machine that was not working, and I asked the attendant that was on duty to pass the information on to the owners. I gave them my card and said that it's in our agreement that they're to maintain those wash machines. What wasn't working is, unfortunately, when I was in there, and I need to go back in there and stop back by, and I will, is the majority of the dryers weren't working, the commercial mm-hmm. dryers. So if you wash your clothes and you don't have any place to mm-hmm. dry them, essentially the laundromat is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. So, yes, our agreement with them states that they will maintain the machines, and during my last inspection of the facility, which was probably about 3 weeks ago, there was only one that wasn't working. But I can go back. I have been in contact with the owners and reminding them that was part of the agreement. So
right. When I was there this morning, there were three that had signs on them saying they weren't working.
Okay.
And I'm glad it sounds like maybe either somebody else called you, or the suggestion that I made to the person who called me was, please call the general manager. That's who takes care of these things. So I'm glad to hear that.
And I will go back by and check again, because
thank you.
You know, three is unacceptable. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, one possibly, but three is absolutely unacceptable. And we did, in good faith, through an agreement, enter into an agreement with them saying, hey, you'll maintain them. And the community needs that laundromat. Mm-hmm. They really do.
Mm-hmm. Final comment is just, I'd like to thank Patrick for the clarifications on his reports. I very much appreciate that. That helps out a lot. Thank you.
Vice President Thompson, back on the washers.
Yeah, if I may add, I received those complaints also a number of months ago, and I did go in there, and there were something like 14 machines that were out of order. And so I spoke to General Manager Gruber, and he then proceeded to speak to the owners. As a follow-up, they did obviously take steps to maintain those machines, and also to clean up the place a little bit. I think it could use a coat of paint and make it a little bit more pleasant for folks. The Chamber of Commerce has also taken up the issue because it's next to restrooms. I think a well-functioning laundromat is probably the most important visitor-serving activity we can have, plus the fact that that certainly many of our local community members use that facility. And it's very important that we have it. So the option of turning off their water or shutting down the machines is really not an option. So we're trying to encourage them to follow up on their commitment to maintain them like they're supposed to.
And I just will add the third observation on that, too. This has been going on a bit for a while. We've been contacted and paying attention to it, and I know that General Manager Gruber has had several contacts, and I appreciate it because it does speak so loudly to valuing everyone in our community. And so I think the more that you encourage the people, that we did certainly work out a very reasonable thing in a partnership to have those new machines there. We want this to be a place where things work, and our community deserves that.
Madam President? I'd like to make a comment on Mr. Gruber's report. I mean, it's laudable that he takes the time out of his day to go to a laundromat, and I'm not sure that's exactly a general manager's requirement, but I think he might as well do it. But his comment about being the lead agent toward the homeless, I feel that too many people think that we're a government and not just a water and wastewater assistant. I'm not against being involved in holding a forum, because if we hold a forum with churches and with other agencies, that's true, we'll get more attendance. We tend to be the draw. But I still believe it's a county responsibility, and if any investment goes into helping the homeless, we can be a catalyst, but we can't. I would be strongly opposed to being somebody that funds that. I don't think that's a responsibility of our ratepayers. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Okay. Any other comments on the report in general? Yes, Director Rice.
I know we passed a reserves policy, but I didn't in the finance manager's report. And I'm sorry to sound so critical, because there's a lot of really good work going on at the district, but it doesn't say anything. It says that all the funds are pooled together, but didn't we? Maybe I misunderstand the way that we set up the reserve policy, because it says that it pools all the funds, and there's only three that are restricted. Didn't we set up a system of?
Well, the reserve policy doesn't have anything to do with the cash. I was going to make a report when the audit comes out.
Okay.
Because that's the only time you can really analyze what you have in cash reserves.
That'll work.
So when it comes out, I'll make a report.
Okay. Thank you.
And while you're up there, can I just kind of maybe review slightly again? On the reserve policy, I believe that when we worked on this, there was also essentially an accountability expectation when certain needs happen where a department needs some money. There's a pay back the bill type of agreement over time.
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to go look, but I think we included a provision where the general fund won't just give cash to the water and wastewater funds. They'll actually will create loans between the funds and eventually require them to pay it back.
Yes.
Once I get the audited financials, which were the auditors in my office yesterday, once we get those reports and we can identify what the reserves actually are, then I'll bring a report to the board and with a recommendation on whether we need to create loans between the funds.
Yes, because I recall when we had the conversation as the budget committee, and for me, I think it really speaks to accountability. It speaks to our organization, and we've never had that before, actually, and so I commend you for that, because I think it's a very important feature for the public to know that that fund really does have, an expectation that it's not just a sort of a run there if we're out of cash and then never look at how we're going to return that cash.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
General Manager Gruber, any more in your report?
No, Madam President, other than the productions that you have in your packets did not show October's totals, and so I included those in an email to you, but you should have those, and then we should have got more recent well data than what you show in your board packet also. So staff will continue to try to make sure that you have the most accurate and up-to-date information, and the public too, on production and also well levels.
Okay, thank you. All right, then, having no further discussion on the general manager's report, let's move to ad hoc reports with the board. Does anyone have any ad hoc reports or other related meetings they wanted to share today? Let's see, we'll start on this side this time. Vice President Thompson.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. I attended the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group meeting and the kickoff for the local hazardous mitigation plan meeting that General Manager Gruber referenced. With respect to the local hazardous mitigation plan, the consultants that will be preparing the plan laid out a process that will include besides discussions with the stakeholders that were at the meeting, they will be having a community-wide meeting sometime after the first of the year to get input from members of the public. After that, they will draft the plan, and the folks that are involved in this plan development have a long history of doing this sort of thing. They developed a plan for the county and a number of other jurisdictions. So the template for what we will have is pretty much in place, and they will be providing this to us. And it will be important in the future in the event that we're going to have to go to FEMA for funding for projects. And so having this plan in hand is something that will be important for the entire community. They anticipate that they'll have something developed by May of next year so that we can then schedule it for the board and consider it. After that, it goes to the State Office of Emergency Preparedness and then from there to FEMA. And so hopefully within the next year, we'll have this document approved. And that's pretty much it. CERT will be doing a chipping project on December, I believe it's 1st and 2nd. And applications to participate in this project are available at the office and then also at Cookie Crock and various other locations throughout the community. So if anyone wants to participate, get the form and get them in, and they will schedule it for you.
Thank you. And just as an addition to that, too, I just wanted to say that our local hazardous mitigation plan coming this far is just another great example of something really good for the community that does take perseverance and patience and persistence. But we finally get to the point where we are now into that process of actually creating the application, the document, and it'll take a while longer to go through the process. But this is a very, very important security kind of blanket for us in a way for our community, too, at the local level. I think it's very important. Director Rice?
I attended the Coastal Commission meeting two weeks ago. I went to the reception, and the Thursday they had a hearing on low-cost visitor serving accommodations. It was a workshop that they did. They're working on putting together a policy. There were a lot of people that were concerned about the short-term rentals and like Airbnb style, and it was a very interesting workshop. If this is something that you're interested in, it's you can watch the hearing online, and they're going to be moving forward on how to prevent some of the takeovers of the hotels, and they just fix them up, and then people who are of low income can no longer visit the coast. Some really interesting little wonky details on it. Also, I went last Tuesday. I went to the Board of Supervisors. They were recognizing Ken Topping, who was Planning Commissioner for this district for 6 years. It was a very nice. They recognized him with a very nice big plaque. He and his wife were there. It was a really nice presentation. He's going to be replaced by somebody from. Who lives in SLO. His name is Mike Moltari. Supervisor Gibson talked a little bit about who he is and things at the NCAC meeting last night. And I just want to personally thank Ken for his service. He was a very valuable planning commissioner, and it's a loss for everybody. But I'm looking forward to getting to know Mike Moltari. Thank you.
Okay. Vice President Thompson?
Just a question of Director Rice. What did the NCAC do with respect to the Ragged Point issue last night?
Call on Kathy here.
They had some recommendations. They didn't recommend approval or denial, and they sent along some specific recommendations about going forward on it. There were quite a few concerns about the ingress and the egress coming in and out in the driveways and the safety of that, and the size and scope of the visual impact is another thing they were concerned about. They're requesting an EIR for the project. Erlyn Singewald, the planner, who's not actually the planner for that project but is the representative to NCAC. He said that they are going to be doing the environmental study coming up. They haven't gotten to that point yet. It's very early in the process. It's a five-phase project, so it's going to last like 15 years or something as they're getting it together. I don't know if Kathy's planning on writing. Looks like Kathy's planning on, so you can probably catch up with some of the other details.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, no other reports then from the board? Okay, we'll move then into item 7, consent agenda. We had no items pulled, Director Byringer?
I move that we accept the consent agenda, approve the consent agenda.
Second the motion.
Seconded by Director Sanders. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Okay, we'll move now into regular business, item 9, and we'll start with item 9A. And so, General Manager Gruber, if you would like to introduce 9A.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 9A is discussion and consideration of a second amendment to the franchise agreement with Mission Country Disposal for Integrated Solid Waste Management Services. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our district counsel, Tim Carmel, and let him explain what is being proposed to the board today. And it's indicated earlier, we do have some folks here with a PowerPoint and be able to answer any questions that the board may have. Thank you.
Thank you, General Manager Gruber, members of the board. Before you today, you have a request from Mission Country Disposal, who's our solid waste franchisor, to amend their franchise agreement. The franchise agreement originally went into effect in 2001. It's been amended once in 2010 to extend the term by 15 years, so currently the term would expire in 2025. The basis of that request for an extension relates to a project that is in process now, a compo gas facility. We actually had a brief presentation, I think about a year ago. It was during the meeting at which we had a blackout, so it didn't really proceed according to plan. But that's the basis for the first part of their franchise amendment request. The second deals with a fairly complicated issue that we can get into in a minute. But I think at this point it's probably advisable to turn it over to Bill Worrell, who's the manager of the Integrated Waste Management Authority for San Luis Obispo County, and he can explain the Compo Gas facility and the reason for this rather long extension request.
Okay, very good. All right. Now, welcome.
Let me start by saying good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. I deal with all the CSDs out around the county, and this is always one of my favorite in that you have a general manager and a council that are experts in solid waste, so it makes my job easier. And you can see that in the staff report. I mean, Tim and I go back probably 20 years in this county, and we have the scars from the garbage wars to prove it. So I would like to talk about that, but I have no clue. So I should say this is a project. The Integrated Waste Management Authority, for some of you that are new, is a regional agency that includes all seven cities, the county, and 10 special districts, the districts that have solid waste authority. Not all districts have it, but obviously you guys have it along with 9 others. And so that's really my governing board that I deal with. And organics management, which we're going to be talking about today, is an issue we've been dealing with at our board for at least 5 years. It's a very difficult one. And with your biosolids, those are similar to dealing with organics. And it's also an issue for a lot of communities dealing with those. So let me first start off by saying CalRecycle is a state agency that regulates all the garbage in California. And in the 1980s, there was a law passed. Uh-huh, there we go. in AB 939, Assembly Bill 939, and that set a diversion goal of 50% by the year 2000. In other words, we had to divert 50% of our waste out of the landfills. That was amended in about 5 years ago with AB 341 that raised that diversion rate to 75%. For the most recent year, we're at 66%. So you can see we've far exceeded the 50%, and we're on our way to getting to 75%. Now, how are we going to get that last 9% of diversion? We have a strategy of three things. First, we want to maximize our existing programs. So curbside recycling, for example, we want to make sure everybody's participating. Construction and demolition recycling, we can do better there, and we want to see that increase. And then green waste diversion. So those are existing programs we would like to optimize because essentially they cost nothing to do that. The second is food waste. We have never dealt with food waste in this county. It's kind of that one waste stream that we've really not addressed. So we need to address that. And the third is the implementation of a commercial organics program. Now, in 2014, the state passed AB 1826. And what that did was set a mandatory schedule for organics out of commercial operations. So beginning in April of this year, if you generated more than 8 yards of garbage a week, well, 8 yards of organics a week, you had to do a recycling program. Next January, that drops down to 4 yards of organics. And in 2019, it becomes tougher because it says 4 yards, but it's 4 yards of garbage. Well, almost every commercial operation has 4 yards of garbage. 4 yards of organics, that's a little tougher because that's, you know, food waste and things like that. But just 4 yards of garbage a week, almost all businesses. And then if we don't reach our goals, the state can raise that to anybody that has more than 2 yards of garbage per week. And that would be in 2020. Now, CalRecycle last year passed new composting regulations that are much more stringent than what they had before. In addition, the State Water Resources Control Board also passed new regulations and requirements in August of last year. And finally, to give us, you know, the trifecta, the Air Resources Control Board came out with their plan to eliminate organics from the landfill because of greenhouse gas generation. So their plan was 75% diversion of organics by 2020, 90% by 2025, and to achieve that was going to take at least 100 new facilities or expanded facilities in California. Well, 2 months ago, the state passed SB 1383, which kind of backed down a little bit from what the Air Resources Control Board was requiring, but still have very ambitious goals. So 50% organics diversion by 2020, 75% by 2025. On the other hand, they did pass a $40 million grant program to go with that requirement. So they've kind of done the carrot and the stick. So that's kind of the statewide situation. Obviously, it's real clear the message to all of us locals are you're going to get the organics out of the landfill. You know, that's a given. So in the Waste Connection service area last year, all the green waste that was being collected was being used for alternative daily cover. So what is alternative daily cover? At the end of the day, according to state law, you have to cover the garbage in the landfills with at least 6 inches of dirt. And that's to keep birds out, the odors down, rodents away. Well, in California, they have something called alternative daily cover. You can use something other than dirt to do that. So the landfill was using the green waste and putting that down as cover. So we get to count that as diversion. Well, you know, it's still going in the landfill. It's really not diversion. And the state last year passed a law that said in 2020 that will no longer count as diversion. So, you know, we all knew that it wasn't a really good idea, and the state pretty much said we're not going to get to count it after 2020 as diversion. In addition, some of the very South County areas were going down to Engle and Gray to the composting plant in Santa Maria. Well, what happened the end of last year is the apple moth infestation hit, and we're infected in this county. They're not in Santa Barbara County. And they actually stopped the trucks from coming to Santa Barbara County and had to be diverted back to Cold Canyon Landfill. Well, that was okay because we could use it for alternative daily cover and we still got our diversion credits. But where we were going to run into trouble was there was no food collection program. As soon as you put food in that green waste, it can no longer be used for alternative daily cover. So if we had started our food program by putting food in the green waste, the only option at that point would have been to landfill the material. Since that time, Santa Barbara has allowed us to again go back to them with the green waste. So that issue is somewhat resolved, but you know, at any time, their ag department can say no more of that material can come into our county. So what Waste Connections did, they looked at the three providers out there. There's Engle and Gray in Santa Maria, which, as I mentioned, that's where some of the stuff was going. There's Mid-State Solid Waste in North County up in Santa Margarita area, there or Creston area. There's a composting facility up there. And then there's the CompoGas project at the Waste Connection site. So in April of 2015, Waste Connections asked these three providers to submit proposals to them. And they were discussed at our May 2015 IWMA board meeting. And two of the people submitted responsive proposals. The North County submittal was not responsive. And then Waste Connections recommended a short-term and a long-term solution. So the short-term solution for this year and next year is to add food waste to the residential green waste program, to start a commercial food waste pilot program, and to send the green waste and food waste to Engle and Gray for composting. And as you know, last August, 51,000 of these little green pails were distributed to all the residential customers for their food waste, and they could then put that in their green waste containers. Waste Connections bought a new truck to start the commercial food waste program. There's about 30 commercial establishments, the very big ones that are the 8 cubic yards or greater a week, that now have food waste collection. And this material is being taken down to Engle and Gray. So this is Engle and Gray's operation, that middle part right here. You can see the site is completely full. They create these windrows, and then they're turned periodically, and that's how the composting occurs. Now, the problem is there's no odor control. There's very little runoff control at these sites. This is the old style of composting. This is what they had at Cold Canyon Landfill before it was shut down for odor reasons. This is the material from our commercial food waste composting pilot project. You can see it looks pretty much like commercial food. But if you notice over here, this is contamination that was pulled out of this pile. So that's quite a bit of contamination, mainly plastic. You know, right here you can see there's three glasses. Well, if you're making compost, the last thing you want in your compost is broken glass. It's, you know, never going to go away. This is the Crab Shack's plastic bibs from Pismo Beach. that was very easy to identify. And again, some more plastic material that's in there. However, on the most part, the stuff coming out of the commercial operations has been pretty good and it's getting better. Now, the second half of it was a long-term solution, the one that's going to have to last for 20 years. And that was the anaerobic digestion facility, which will be a fully enclosed, state-of-the-art facility. Literally, the truck drives there, the door opens, it goes inside, it closes. The doors are never open for more than about 15 seconds. Waste Connections would provide the site and an existing building, and then CompoGas, HCI, would basically design, build, operate, and finance the facility over a 20-year period. Now, CompoGas technology, there's about 75 plants around the world, very well established in Europe and other parts of the world, but it would be the first facility in the United States. So right here is the airport. So when you fly out of San Luis Airport, if you look to your left, you'll see the yard for Waste Connections, this big site right there. So right here is the blue area within their yard that would be where the CompoGas facility would be located. And this is the existing building that they can utilize. This had been a tank manufacturing operation. So they have this about 12,000 square foot building that they can use. And it will help, you know, obviously keep the cost down by having that. This is a facility right outside of the city of Zurich, and that's a CompoGas facility. And you can see there's literally a building 50 feet away. And right here, about 1,500 feet away, is a big residential development. There's a golf course right here. So these facilities can be really good neighbors, and that's one of the advantages of going with this technology. So this is that facility, and in fact, this is a fueling pump for natural gas or for biogas for vehicles. Won't bore you with the process, but basically they receive, they shred it, and then they run it through an anaerobic digester. Now, in Europe, most of the time they have these doors that open and the truck dumps into a pit. As I said, in the facility in San Luis, the trucks will actually drive inside the building and dump. And that way the door is open not as long as an operation like this. This is what the material looks like when it's dumped. A crane will pick it up, goes to a shredding operation. That's the conveyor belt into the digester. So this big device here is a digester. It's about a 100-foot long, 16-foot tube, and literally the material runs right down it, and it's an anaerobic operation, so it means there's no oxygen. So what it produces is methane gas, and that methane gas is then cleaned up and burned for power. And you also get a finished product, compost, out of the operation that you can use. And that's just a close-up of the finished product. And then this is the biofilter. So the air from inside goes through this membrane material and is cleaned. So why do they need a franchise extension? If you're financing this facility, you can either finance it over basically any length of time. They're going to have a 20-year contract to operate this plant. So by financing it over 20 years instead of 10, it saves about $25 a ton. You know, think about it. It's going to be about a $14 million plant. So over 10 years, it's $1.4 million a year. Over 20 years, it's $700,000 a year, and it's about a 30,000-ton a year plant. So pretty easy. And, you know, that kind of ignores the financing costs. The longer you go, the higher the financing costs. But so you basically are saving $25 a ton. Waste Connections will be providing the receiving building and committing the organics to the project. So they have to guarantee to HCI the material for this plant to run. So to be able to guarantee that, they have to have then the collection contracts on the other end. And so far, these extensions have been granted by San Luis Obispo County, Napomo, Oceano, and all the five cities within the service area. So all those communities have already provided the extension to Waste Connections for the project. And finally, last slide is what's the status of the project? So the Airport Land Use Commission approved this project on June 29th. County Planning approved it August 25th. It was appealed to the Board of Supervisors, and 2 days ago, the Board of Supervisors on a 5-0 plant denied the appeal. And the plan is to basically break ground on the facility before the end of the year. So that's kind of an overview of the organics project. If you'd like at the time, I could answer questions, or if you want to wait, or your pleasure.
Any questions from the board? Any further comments? Do you have
a question?
I can't see a green light.
Question. Bill, has anybody from your shop or the Integrated Waste Management Board looked at the agreement between CompoGas and the waste hauler?
No, that's a private party agreement between those two, and I don't think we'll end up seeing it.
Okay. Is there a representative from the waste hauler here?
Yes, there's a couple guys from
Maybe we can ask some questions of them. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions, Director Rice?
This is just a really simple question.
Sure.
A yard, like compared to my trash can that I put out or my recycle can, I don't know how much a yard.
Oh, okay. Most of the dumpsters that you see around town are either 3 or 4 yards.
Okay, so a standard dumpster size is about 4 yards.
It's about 3 to 4 yards.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I know it's a little basic, but thank you.
No.
Okay.
One more question.
Sure. Go ahead.
What's the percentage of the waste stream that goes to the compo gas facility?
Boy, as I recall, we generate in the waste connection service area about 700 tons a day of garbage, and a little over 100 tons a day would be going to this facility. So what's that, 13% okay. or something?
So the 700 tons of garbage is the overall quantity of garbage, whether it's green waste or any other material?
Actually, that's what's being landfilled right now.
Okay.
About 100, so 700 landfilled, about 100 of green waste and 100 of recycling, very round numbers.
Got it.
Do you have a question, Vice President Thompson?
You say you handed out about 50,000 of these little green buckets.
Right.
Have you gotten any kind of feedback in terms of what folks thought about using them or how many people are using them or what, you know, it seems to, is your project dependent upon a lot of participation from people with their green buckets?
Well, you guys are public officials. You know, it ranges from people that love them to people that hate them. There's been some people that have thrown them in the garbage, and there's been other people that love them. The biggest complaint we've heard is that we don't allow people to put bags in them, even compostable bags. And that really was a condition of Engle and Gray, because they were too concerned that we would get non-compostable bags, and there's no way of knowing the difference. And compostable bags are really expensive. So I would say anywhere from 50 to 75%, if I had to guess, the people are actually using them, something in that range. It won't be a huge quantity of waste. The big food waste is coming out of the restaurants and the commercial sectors, and that's going to be a much easier program, I think, to implement than to try and make sure every residential customer is using one of those buckets. But if I had to guess, and you know, all of Alameda County is doing this, all of San Francisco County, based on what we've seen, it's probably in the 50 to 75% range.
I would think that after about 6 days with a piece of fish sitting in there, it would probably not be too pleasant. I don't know.
That's a natural process.
You're right.
Yeah, no, I fully understand what you're saying.
Okay, I have some questions. In the county so far, how many customers or communities do you serve?
Waste Connection serves everybody from Oceano, Napomo to San Simeon, up
okay.
south of the Great.
So, and out of that service area, how many of those communities have supported this?
Every community except for this one in Cayucas.
Okay. And talk to me a little bit about the couple of things, timelines, if this is approved for building is one of them. But the first one is on the cost to the community. You talk about a tipping fee, but that it'll be kind of hidden. Actually, is what it says. It doesn't say the word hidden, but it kind of amounts to that, and yet you're going to try to keep everything within a cost of living, but you don't want to calculate the tipping fee in as part of the cost of living, and yet it's a charge.
Sure. Okay, so the timeline for construction is they want to start construction by the end of the year, and it's about a 12 to 14 month construction period. So that's CompoGas's plan. In terms of the cost to the community, when you did your rate increase last year, that included the cost for both the short-term and the long-term solution. So you basically have already implemented the cost to pay for this project, unless there's something really wrong that occurs. You know, for example, PG&E, I think, is talking about charging them $600,000 just to connect their utility system. But the idea was, last year when you did that rate increase, it covered both short-term and long-term. Now, the cost of living increase is just something in your general garbage agreement, and Tim might be able to jump in more on this. So that covers all the costs, not just compo gas, but the garbage, the recycling, and the green waste. And that's as I recall, for 2 years you do cost of living, then every third year you come back and do a rate study and reset the rates based on that rate study, is how the community sets those rates. And you have a clause that says, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, because most there's like 20 garbage contracts I deal with, so I don't know exactly specifics on everyone. But if their rate increases exceed the cost of living, that gives you an option to terminate the agreement. So that provides protection that you basically have locked in a garbage company's rates for 20 years at the cost of living increase, unless you decide there's something else that's going on that's going to make it more than that, and agree to include those in your rates.
And I think, in fact, in what you crafted, that it does talk about the termination clause, Mr. Carmel.
It does, and Bill explained it pretty well. So again, there are two components to this proposed Second Amendment to the franchise. One is the 20-year extension, and that's intended to address the Compo Gas facility. The 20-year extension wouldn't go into effect until the date that the facility actually began to start up. That has some issues that we'll probably want to discuss. The second component of it deals with this provision that we have in our franchise that essentially says if their rate increases exceed the cost of living, then you have an option at any time, any rate increase, cumulatively, you have an option to opt out of the contract, to cancel, to terminate the agreement. And what their proposal does is exclude tipping fees from Cold Canyon Landfill from that calculation. The County Board of Supervisors approved, I believe it was in 2014, a 9-year sequence of tipping fee increases. I think it's $225 per ton. So those are automatic. They're going to go into effect. They're 9 years. It's that component that they'd like to exclude from the calculation for purposes of determining whether they've exceeded the CPI. So, you know, I look at it as it incentivizes them to keep increases below the cumulative increase, because if not, they face termination. So those are the two components that you're looking at in this second franchise agreement amendment.
Okay, and then back on the construction timeline that you proposed of having this finished by in 2 years, I think, and then we would have after that 20 years of an agreement, correct?
Well, it's not ironclad. There are some problems in the language that I see. There's a provision in there that essentially says they'd like to start it on this date, and if they don't, it's extended. In fact, it's extended indefinitely as long as they're not the cause, that they're not negligent, and the reason for the delay is not as a result of anything they've done. So if you actually play that out, the franchise could actually, you know, it could be a 30-year extension, and I know I'm probably playing pretty loose with the facts there, but let's just say the Compo Gas facility, for whatever reason, and it wasn't within their control, didn't go online in 2020 or 2021 or 2022 or 2023. Under the wording that I read in here, that franchise agreement 20-year extension isn't going to go into effect until the Compo Gas facility starts. So if it starts in 2023, you're looking at a termination date in 2043. I did that math in my head. It's pretty unusual for me.
But wouldn't then the incentive for staying on the time projection, rather than us just knowing that this 20 years could turn into 30 years, wouldn't we want some language that would have some kind of consequence for if it goes over 1, 2, 5, 10 years, what our options are?
I think you'd want to modify that provision a little bit so that you could cap it and say, you know, in no eventuality extend beyond 2022 yeah. or 2023. I mean, I think it's foreseeable that they're going to be able to construct this thing, and I don't know what I'm talking about. But
you know, it's always the best intentions.
Right.
The best intentions.
And
yes.
But again, I have to look at the worst case, and the worst case is it doesn't, and it doesn't for a number of years, and then you're looking at a franchise agreement that in theory could go 29 years, 30 years, and that's unthinkable for me. I've never seen anything like it. I understand the purpose of this. So that's a problem. And then there are some other nuances with regard to the proposal to address this Cold Canyon landfill tipping fee issue, only with regard to some of the language they've utilized. They're incorporating a document, a rate-setting agreement between the County of San Luis Obispo and the garbage company. It's a long agreement. I asked Bill if he'd ever read it, and I think his answer was, are you kidding? I have not read it. And so to incorporate a document that's that long into our franchise agreement where there are potential inconsistencies and ambiguities really ran counter to my common sense. So you'll see that in the contract that I have in your packet, I've excluded that provision. I've stricken that provision. But again, there are some other nuances that are a little bit troublesome, and I have a feeling we'll get into them in this discussion a little bit more.
Thank you.
And I think, to clarify, when you say a 20-year extension, really your current agreement goes through 2025. So if they started operation in 2018, you're looking at a 13-year extension to your existing agreement, because your existing, in other words, what they want is the 20 years when the plant's in operation. Well, your agreement already goes to 2025. So if they do start in 2018, it would go to 2038. So it's really a 12 or 13-year extension. It's not a 20-year. And maybe the way to handle the – doesn't it say if they don't start construction by 2020, if you take out, you know, anything for, you know, act of God or whatever, and just make that a solid, it has to be operational by 2020, otherwise there's no agreement, maybe that would solve the going on forever.
That would. Some cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, that's not what it says. The 20 years runs from whenever the facility goes into place. Mm-hmm. So if it goes in, and if it starts production in 2020, you're looking at 2040.
Yeah, but it's got to start by 2020 unless there's something that they can't control happens, right?
Right, but that's pretty loose language.
Yeah, no, I think you could take that out.
Yep. We talked a little bit about that, but yes, those are the key issues.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I think Director Bowinger
I do have a question, and I'm sure we're going to get into discussion on other issues, but have all the permits, is there a possibility that the Air Resources Quality Control Board could say that the compo gas is not a viable solution, or do you see any hurdles from agencies?
At the Board of Supervisors hearing on Tuesday, the APCD was there, and they were very adamant that this facility is going to meet their requirements, and it's a very easy permit for them to get. It's similar to the same permit they have at Cold Canyon for a methane burning facility. So really the conditional use permit was the big one. The other permits are going to be much easier. So I don't see permitting as going to be an issue.
Okay. And in general, I'm hearing a little banter back and forth, and I was just noticing that Mr. Carmel gave us an attorney-client privileged update to what's in our package, with a couple of lines. My general feeling is that this isn't an agreement that we can approve today. I think there's some clarification that we need, but that's just a general comment.
Okay. Can you move your cup, Director Sanders, because then I can see your green light.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which is off. Okay. All right. Very good. Thing. That's why I kept doing this thing when I was looking over to you. Thank you. Director Rice?
First, I'd like to thank you for the good questions, and so we can get into some good discussion. I actually have looked at the rate-setting agreement, and it was created like in 1980, I believe. And so that's way before Prop 218. So it's a very plug in a bunch of numbers into a bunch of things, make some calculations kind of situation that we need to maybe look at and ensure, because I see that's one of the things that we need to make sure is happening, and because it is a very long calculating situation, I almost couldn't follow it, but I took the time to do it, and that was a couple of years ago, so the details are not in my brain at the moment. I just remember it's a rather complex that may not comply with what Prop 218 requires. So thank you very much.
Okay. All right. We have no request for public comment on this. So then we've had... And thank you for that presentation.
Oh, you're welcome.
and for the follow-up discussion. So, Director Sanders?
Are we going to hear from the waste hauler from Mission Disposal?
Oh.
Is there a representative?
Yes.
Lots of questions.
Okay, why don't you, one of you, both of you, come up?
I'm Matt Myers, Mission Country Disposal. This is Rigo Diaz, Controller Operations. So any questions for him or questions for me?
Thank you. Okay, and we do have some questions, and we'll start with Director Sanders.
I'm very, very reticent to support this on a couple of grounds. First of all, are you willing to share the agreement you have with HZI on the Compo Gas facility?
With what Bill said, it's a private agreement, and I don't think we can disclose that information with the CSD since it's outside of the realm of the franchise agreement. But if we have questions with Pat, he could probably give you certain details, but the actual agreement
So you're asking us to support a 20-year extension for your franchise, and you won't disclose to us the terms of the agreement that is supposed to support that 20-year franchise extension?
So there is a clause in there for a 20-year supply agreement from the cities and CSDs around the county. So within that clause, that's why we're before you guys today, to make sure we have that Green Waste Organics supply agreement fulfilled. So that's one specific criteria.
I'm talking about the financial aspects of the agreement.
Well, the 4% price increase you guys approved with the 9.93 last year, that encompassed the organics disposal diversion from the landfill?
No. So, I mean your financial arrangement with HZI. I don't mean the cost to us. What I'm talking about, the terms of your agreement, what's the capital cost? How much is the financing charge? What do the numbers tell us about your relationship with HZI on the financial side?
So Missing Country Disposal Waste Connections is not included in the financing at all in this project. It's all Hitachi Zoen, the Compo Gas Company. They're going to operate and finance this 100%. We just have to make sure that we fulfill the 20-year supply agreement. That's pretty much the only
What your agreement is to provide them with the waste stream on a dedicated basis.
Correct.
Why can't the CSD enter into an agreement with HZI and require that any franchise agreement going forward has a provision in it that dedicates the green waste stream to HZI?
I think because we're the direct hauler to them and we're the...
Yeah,
the,
but we
the
can require by contract that you do that. So why? What I'm trying to get at is where's the public policy underpinning to support a 20-year franchise agreement extension?
So part of the reason we're here is because Patrick Fitton, the district manager, is actually meeting with HCI based on the decision from the SLO County Board of Supervisors. So to answer your question, you may be able to see it. That's just a question that is beyond matter I being able to answer at this moment. So that is very well possible, Director Sanders, but not a question we can answer right now.
Okay, well, I'd certainly like to see it before we
And that may be a good reason that, again, we'll have to look at this further. So any other questions of the representatives? Well, we appreciate your response, and it's helpful to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion at this time?
Madam President, yes. I just, since it's on the agenda, I have a couple comments that I think are germane to the subject. One is that if we were to opt for a different hauler, there isn't a bidder in the world that would be able to underbid Mission County because they're serving all of the areas and they have the resources. It's something that we need to do. I found them to be an excellent company, by the way, the hauler. Tom Martin, who has left, I guess, but since then they just are a very, very responsive organization. And I think there's enough Prop 218 and other checks and balances that will make them successful and not exorbitantly profitable. So in general, we're kind of stuck with this. Other people are doing it, but I do tend to think that today, given the discussion that's going on from a contractual perspective, we cannot move forward on this particular agreement. And I do agree with Mr. Sanders in that when we do consider a 20-year extension, we should do it with greater care. Thank you for the staff report. Thank you for all your effort. But for today, until more T's are crossed and I's are dotted, I don't think we can move forward. And there's another thing, too, which is maybe the elephant in the room. We found out that most other franchisees get a 10% franchise fee, and we're probably one of the few that don't. Now that, and I think that we can incorporate that in this particular discussion in the contract, maybe look at what they could do as far as the franchise fee. And but you know, that's something that's important to consider too.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, so do we need, at this time, do we need a motion to take it under further review?
I don't think you need a motion. Perhaps either appointing maybe a couple of you to work with staff to refine this so that you're more comfortable mm-hmm. with it would be helpful, or else provide the direction now. But it's really difficult to negotiate or to hash out contracts as complicated as this one in this environment. So I think the best thing to do is just to maybe direct a couple, you know, a couple of you would agree to sit down with me and with Jerry and with representatives of the garbage company and work on the issues that have been identified today.
That would be my thought. That and we have all of us, I think, certainly have an interest in this, a big interest. But I'm wondering to start out with if Director Sanders and Director Behringer, if you would like to represent the board.
Sure. Yeah.
Or are there other directors that would rather be involved? Does it matter? Well,
whatever the consensus is here is fine.
Amanda read the contract.
I think we have a consensus.
Amanda's the only one that's read the this.
And there might be a little bit of synergy. I don't know what Director Rice is going to be doing next year, but you know, at one time we were on the wastewater ad hoc committee together, and you know, that I don't think this relates that much, but this one is going to be a 1 month commitment, I think, you know, mm-hmm. to deal with. So I'd be willing to be one of the members of that representative.
If she's willing, perhaps Director Rice would be the other.
Would you?
Yeah, I'm definitely willing.
Mm-hmm. And you have been working together on the rates too, and other mm-hmm. things. So that certainly makes sense too. All right. So we don't need a motion for this then. Then we will be looking to Director Rice and Director Behringer for guidance after an in-depth review. Okay. Thank you very much. And gentlemen, thank you for being with us this afternoon. Okay. We are ready then to move on to item 9B. And General Manager Gruber, if you would introduce item 9B.
Thank you, Madam President and CCSD board members. 9B is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 42-216, approving an employment agreement with Patrick O'Reilly and approval of an amendment to the salary schedule for the position of the finance manager. The recommendation, as I stated, staff recommends that the Board of Directors adopt the resolution and approve an employment agreement with Patrick, our CCSD finance manager. The fiscal impact, the approval of the new employment agreement will result in an annual salary of $131,153. One of the additional changes to the employment agreement is to add a monthly allowance, auto allowance of $350 per month. And for consistency purposes, Section 3, termination of the severance pay, has been changed to read the same as a recently appointed fire chief employment agreement. The total annual additional cost for the district will be $21,808, as shown below. The total additional cost for the remaining 7 months of the current fiscal year will total $12,721. The position of the finance manager is crucial to the stability of the Cambria Community Services District. Accordingly, a new employment agreement was negotiated by the general manager and the finance manager, Patrick O'Reilly. The employment agreement is for a 3-year term and provides for an annual salary in the amount of $131,153, which is step E for the proposed salary and equal to the salary of the CCSD engineer and the fire chief in an annual salary schedule for the Cambria exempt employees. Additionally, he is being provided with an auto allowance of $350 and a severance package equal to the fire chief employment agreement. Madam President, you had asked that we had provide some similar course or some similar cities and special districts. We didn't include any special districts, but we included three other cities. We didn't do an in-depth comprehensive salary survey, but we did pick Morro Bay, Atascadero, and Paso Robles. For Morro Bay, the position's called finance director, and the salary range is $117,588 to $142,928. Atascadero, the similar position, is administrative services director. The low range is $110,459, and the high range is $143,263. And then for Paso Robles, the finance manager, the low range is $103,661. And the high range is $131,727. And I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that the board may have regarding this.
I think before that, now we have a request for public comment. And so we will move to public comment and then we'll move to discussion. Christina Tobin. Mr. Carmel.
Hi, Christina Tobin here. I saw something posted on Cambria Currents today from the Cal Coast News, so I'm going to read some of it and incorporate some the other. You can go find it for yourself. It says, a month after discrepancies surfaced in the CCSD accounting, General Manager Gruber is proposing a nearly $15,000 salary increase for Finance Manager Mr. O'Reilly. The amount would amount to more than $21,000 increase in O'Reilly's total compensation. Earlier this year, as we all know, Gruber received an approximately a $10,000 raise. He sought an even higher raise, of which it was dropped following public outrage, higher rate of 38%. On Thursday, the CCSD board today will consider O'Reilly's salary, as mentioned, $14,793 from $116,000 to over $131,000. And if the board grants it, the total compensation will increase over $21,000, which would include bumps in health and pension benefits. Gruber's proposal to place O'Reilly at the maximum level of pay in the CCSD's salary range for the finance manager. In the staff report, we just heard him say that he's comparing that the salary ranges for the finance director positions within the city of Atascadero, Morro Bay, and Paso Robles. That is very misleading because each of these cities in particular have significantly higher populations than Cambria. Very misleading. While Gruber's raise was still under consideration, Cal Coast News, good for them, reported there were significant discrepancies in the CSD's accounting and the general manager's pay. Direct staff report salary figures to the CSD board differed from what they reported in the California Comptroller's Office. And additionally, last November, CalPERS, the state retirement system, released an audit of the CSD showing the district's engaged in other questionable accounting practices in recent years. The audit covered from July 11 to June 14. O'Reilly began working in Cambria in November 14, according to LinkedIn. In response to the audit, O'Reilly said the district agreed with the majority of the findings but disputed them. So, of the 56 positions at the CCSD, 34 are eligible for government pensions. That's a stunning 60% of the workforce and a sizable future liability for the ratepayers of Cambria. As determined earlier this year before Gruber's raise, his pension will pay out to more, according to Taxpayers United of America, $1.5 million. So let's keep in mind that this does not even include the what he may be getting from Big Bear for working there for 4 years, Alderton, 2.5 years, Florida for 18 years, and now Cambria for 6 years. That's a lot of money. Our country has yet fully recovered from the Great Recession that began in late 2007 and final at the end here. So,
Madam President,
despite claims of the contrary, many taxpayers are not finding relief, even with the ebb and flow of the economy. In communities across the country, large and small additional tax burdens forced upon taxpayers by local governments
is up. We appreciate
and taxing
that.
Districts
Thank you very much for your comments.
Their long-term financial
would
sovereignty.
Ask that you take your seats. Thank you very
Cambria
much.
Cambria is unfortunately
so
no longer.
So we'll
Thank
go ahead and move
time.
On into the discussion.
I appreciate your time. And I also asked to put evening meetings on the agenda at the end of
Thank
this
you.
Meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, we are ready for discussion on the item, if we have any discussion.
Well, just a comment, Madam President. My recollection is that we got a very clean bill of health when the last audit was done of the CSD, so I don't understand where the comments are coming from in terms of somehow the CSD is not running its financial operation properly. I didn't ask her a question.
This is from Calvary.
Just making
yeah, comments.
We can't have this today.
Today.
I really appreciate
Thank
that. Thank you.
And I consider the source of the information. So,
Madam President,
yes, sir.
I do think that earlier today when Mr. O'Reilly gave his report, his corrections, his updates, every meeting, every month, he is making things more specific. I think it's everybody this morning, before when he gave his presentation, I think all the directors were supporting him. I think he's a valuable person for this particular district. It's much more complex. It's not how many people live here. It's the Morro Bay is considering a $150 million desal plant. I mean, we have one in place, and I think Mr. O'Reilly is helping keeping the wheels on the wagon there. He's more valuable to us than he is to any other community. And to try and change it again, now, I'm not saying that we're changing it, to pay him a standard salary along with the district engineer and the experience that he's bringing to the job, I think that I would move that we approve item 9B.
I second the motion. Can we have
please.
Order, please?
Yes.
It's hard to take care of business here when people are shouting out from the audience. I second the motion, and I look at this not so much as a raise for Patrick O'Reilly, although I think he's very deserving, but it's really like a reorganization. It's a recognition that the finance manager's position is equally important to other positions where we pay comparable salaries. Population is not necessarily the yardstick by which we should measure salaries. If we did that, relative to other jurisdictions, our salaries would be so non-competitive that we wouldn't be able to hire anybody. As I've tried to impress upon people as much as I can, this, although a small district, is very complex relative to other districts. We have more jurisdictional overlays. We have more government agencies that regulate what we do, and trying to navigate through all of that is extremely difficult. It's much more complex than managing Morro Bay. It's much more complex than managing Paso Robles, for example. So looking at it as kind of a reorganization, if you will, a recognition that the finance officer's position is of equal importance to the other top positions we have in the district. I'm supporting this, and I'm seconding the motion.
Thank you. And both Director Rice and then Vice President Thompson.
I believe, and I may be incorrect, but I believe the audit that Ms. Tobin was talking about was an audit by CalPERS when they came in, and that's why we had to do the new salary schedule. which I believe was on consent either last month or the month before that. Patrick is insanely valuable to this district. He has done a lot to get things under control. There's also things that haven't happened the way that they need to happen. We should have had brought to us the change in auditor. We discussed that last year, that we needed to get a new auditor this year, and yet the audit has already gone forward. I know how much this year, next year, it's going to cost us. I don't know how we're going to pay for it. We are already super close to the amount of revenue that's coming in, and we all know that there's going to be some urgency or other that we're going to have to cover. When Patrick was hired, is it true, General Manager, that everyone, including you, is on those A, B, C, D, E salary schedule, or is not? Is that not the case? Get a step up each year.
I'm not sure I quite understand the question.
So there's five steps for the employees. Is that only for the union employees?
No, that's for everyone.
And so you're
other than me.
And so you're saying that Patrick is already up on E?
Correct.
Can you explain to me how that happened when it's supposed to be a year?
Well, it's
for each step.
In many instances, to get a good qualified individual for a position, whether it's the finance manager or a wastewater supervisor or a water supervisor or other key positions for the organization, I do have the flexibility to offer them the E step or the B step or the C step. In many instances, it just depends on the experience and the value that they'll bring to that position. If somebody was to take an entry-level position without a lot of experience, then the A through E process that you're referring to is usually the course that we take. But we're finding in the public sector right now, and since pension reform, and since the mass exodus of the baby boomers, if you will, it's becoming more difficult to obtain people in those type positions. And so, when Patrick was hired, and I just want to touch on the salary that Patrick was hired, and he was gracious enough to take the position that I thought was a very low salary at that time. He took the position. We offered him I think you started. Did you start at E-Step, Patrick? Or no, I don't think he started at E-Step. He started at D-Step, correct? Yeah, he started at D-Step, then after a one-year period of time, went to E-Step. But one of the reasons this is being brought forward is kind of Director Sanders touched on, is it's really a matter of equity and valuing that senior management team equally. And I think if you try to put a more of a value, let's say, on one person than another, it becomes a little bit problematic for the organization. So Patrick definitely deserves it, but it also is a matter of bringing him in line with the fire chief and the district engineer. You had mentioned briefly about the importance, or we're not sure where we're going to be, you know, financially in a couple years or a year. That just reiterates all the more need to have a good quality person like Patrick in that position. I've worked with finance managers in the public sector for many years, and I can say Patrick is the best one that I've ever worked with. The board a couple years or so ago asked that the financial reports be a little more detailed and more broadened and provide more information. Mm-hmm. I think he's addressed all those things. So I want him to stick around for a while, and I'm hoping that the board will consider this.
Vice President Thompson.
Yes. When I worked for Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley and then Richard Reardon, I oversaw an office that had a budget of hundreds of millions of dollars, and there was no question in my mind that the most important person in that organization was the finance person. I think I see the same thing in terms of this district. The most important person, with all due respect to Mr. Gruber, is probably Mr. O'Reilly. And I think it's very important that we retain him. Patrick has received praise from a real diverse group of Cambrians. I remember Elizabeth Bettenhausen specifically, but others have praised the quality of his work. I think that our district is incredibly transparent in terms of the finances, and if only some of the local foundations were as transparent, we'd be in much better shape in this community. But I definitely support this this raise from Mr. O'Reilly.
Thank you. I, too, would like to speak to my experience with Mr. O'Reilly. Both Vice President Thompson and I serve on the Finance Committee, and so we work with him routinely. What I appreciate several things, but certainly to start with, your openness to people that have questions. You give very detailed, very accurate, very factual information to anyone in our community, to any board members. You take the time to meet with all of us when we feel not comfortable or we don't understand, or we want more information. I see you as keeping us in a safe harbor all the time. I see us as having less revenues than we projected on the rate increase, and yet we are still managing that budget. And I thought you gave, in fact, a very good detailed explanation today. I think that the clause that or the expectation that we have put in place now, I have never seen happen anyplace else. We have, quote, a reserve fund, and we are moving toward, of course, when people run into the unforeseeables, as we do call it in our budget talk, which are always there. Unforeseeables are absolutely a guarantee to happen within a year. We do essentially borrow the money from the reserves, and the policy that you are putting into place to actually come up with a repay plan of what essentially needs to be a loan is what keeps that reserves healthy. So I think that certainly I support you. I think you are very patient. I think you're very insightful. I think you're a good mentor to many of us. And so certainly you have my support. Any other comments at this time? Director Rice.
This is about the salaries and not the person. I have very high confidence that Patrick is doing a good job. I also know that the amount of money is going to be hard for us to find when we have lots of things that we need to be spending things on. If Patrick's about to leave, if we don't give him a car allowance, that would be good to know. But when I look at this and our budget and the numbers, ignoring who it is for, because that is what we need to be doing, is looking at how much this position is costing the district, which means costing all of us who pay the fees and the taxes. I just can't support this big increase. It's not about the person for me, because I don't want to lose him. If we're going to lose him, that's another story. And it's not that I don't have confidence. Believe me, these reports that I had been asking for years are finally here, and I'm very glad of that. This is not about performance at all. It's about actual money that we have coming in and whether we can afford it long term, not just this year, but next year and the next year and then the retirement and all of the things that go along with that. So I regrettably, because I really do like Patrick, but this isn't about Patrick. This is about the position of finance manager, which I agree is important, but we can't afford it. We can't afford what a lot of the salaries we're paying, and we're doing it. I don't think we should add to the problem.
Director Barringer?
I'd like to bring it back to, I don't think, I'm going back to what Director Sanders is saying, and it's true, it's the equity. In fact, if you really wanted equity from what Mr. Thompson is saying, the finance manager should get the highest salary. And Patrick could take vacation or find another job and go someplace. If we need to replace him, this is the salary that we would need, what we need in order to bring somebody of even lesser quality to it. And yes, I do see the impact of pensions. And, that's a problem. The pension problems, I don't think we can solve right here. And what somebody's done in the past, whatever. Anyway, I still support it. I support the salary for the position. But I don't like Patrick, but that doesn't matter. To replace him would cost him.
Any further comments? Okay. Then I think we have our motion, our second. Let's have a roll call, please.
Director Barringer?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion passes 4-1. Okay, let's move then into item. We have, of course, no need for additional public comment from the beginning item. Let's move to item 11, future agenda items. If we have any requests, any discussion on future agenda items. Going once? Going twice, because we are going to, of course, adjourn in a moment to close session. Okay, no further or any discussion on item 11 at this time?
I do have a question about the swearing in. Do we have a date set for that? Because I think we only just have the regular December meeting scheduled. Is it going to be at that meeting? I'm just trying to, like...
They can be sworn in before, which we've done in the past, but...
It hasn't been planned yet, is that the idea? Okay.
It usually takes place
unofficially
in the
clerk's
office.
It's not finalized, so I just was asking.
It would be officially...
December's coming quick is my thought.
December 15th is our board member.
Okay.
Our board meeting is early because of the holidays, so...
Right.
It's going to be, you're going to turn right back around. You guys are going to have another board meeting before you know it, just like this one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be less than a month before our next board meeting.
Okay. So we may not have an extra meeting for that.
I don't see a need for
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't either. I was just asking. Thank you.
Okay. Then, being no further business today, this meeting is adjourned to closed session.